This podcast is intended for healthcare professionals only. Welcome to the Oncology Knowledge into Practice podcast, where we discuss game-changing topics in clinical oncology with leading experts in the field. In this series, we are considering best practice in the management of cancers of the thyroid gland. This series is accredited. So, if you would like to receive CME credits, be sure to listen via our websites at oncology.knowledgeintopractice.com. If you're listening on another platform, you'll find a link in the episode notes. This episode is supported by an educational grant from Eli Lilly, who've had no influence on the content or the choice of faculty. I am your host, Daniel Ward. In today's episode, we will discuss why and how guidelines might be adapted to suit specific practice situations. To give an expert insight into the realities of implementing guidelines to suit a variety of settings, we welcome Dr. Connor Stewart, Associate Professor from Emory University in Atlanta, USA. Before we jump into a discussion, we'll spend a few minutes covering some rationale and background to this topic. If you are already familiar with this, please feel free to skip ahead to the interview at the 3 minutes and 30 seconds mark. International and national clinical practice guidelines are a crucial resource to inform evidence-based practice and reduce variation in patient care. The production and publication of guidelines must necessarily be accompanied by broad dissemination and proactive encouragement of their uptake in clinical practice. Indeed, in reality, incorporation and adherence to guideline recommendations may lag behind than expected, requiring tailored dissemination and implementation strategies to suit the circumstances of practice. Furthermore, adoption of guideline-recommended practice may be limited by the skills, training, or expertise of the local clinicians, or lack of mandatory equipment or time to deliver a recommended action. Adaptation of guidelines to local contexts is essential to integrate practicable improvements to clinical care. This process must consider local needs, priorities, legislation, policies, resources, scope of care, and existing practice. Many approaches have been taken to localize guidelines. For example, a local task force may be developed to assess guidelines and develop a feasible protocol for local implementation, which may be endorsed by stakeholders to ensure validity for end users. Alternatively, personal visits by trained personnel to local settings to provide information with the aim of changing practice, development of additional educational material or meetings pertained to the guidelines, or promotion of guidelines by local opinion leaders have all been trialed. There remains no conclusion on the superiority of one strategy over another. International, national, and regional guidelines exist for the management of thyroid cancer. Due to the variation in publication dates and the pace of evolution of the therapeutic landscape in thyroid cancer, there is naturally some variation between these guidelines, beyond that due to adaptation to the local context. This is particularly pertinent to precision medicine and targeted therapy, where approvals and technologies are moving at a pace. Having covered some of the challenges surrounding the integration of guidelines in a local context, let's discuss how this is approached in real-world practice. For this, we welcome the expertise of Dr. Connor Stewart. Thank you for joining us today. So firstly, in your experience, what are the potential barriers to the implementation of international guidelines into local clinical practice?
Sure. Well, thanks so much for having me here today. When I think about, what prevents physicians, providers from being able to implement general practice guidelines, I kind of break it up into certain groups. For one, I think part of it is time, because a lot of the guidelines now discuss doing genomic testing to find the right targeted agent for appropriate patients. But one aspect of that testing is time, to get the tissue, to send it off to the testing, to get the results, can take 2 to 4 weeks, depending. And sometimes whether patients or providers don't feel like they have that time to wait or get anxious, understandably, to start therapy faster. Another issue can be access. In limited resource environments, it may be harder to get some of the either diagnostic or treatment elements that are recommended. It could also be a knowledge, a certain lack of knowledge, because, a lot of different, for instance, physicians, medical oncologists treat a lot of different cancers, and all the fields are moving forward quite rapidly with different advances. and they might not be the most up to date on the newest, you know, medication or other procedure that may be recommended. So keeping providers up to date. And I think one other topic I can think of is that coordination, you know, something like thyroid cancer can require a lot of different coordination between different specialties. And if you're, you know, if somebody's practicing an institution where maybe, you know, the surgeons or the rad oncs are not all coming together as cohesively as a team, different parts of the care might be missed or slowed down.
Thank you, Dr. Stewart. You mentioned developments in the field. Could you elaborate on this, please?
So when I talk about recent developments and kind of the rapidly expanding landscape for thyroid cancer, one of those developments that's important for everyone who's treating thyroid cancer to know about is, you know, appropriate genomic testing to determine the best potential treatment options for patients that require, you know, patients with advanced disease that require therapy. You know, some of the mutations that we've seen in recent years that have targeted therapies include RET, ALK, NTRK in rare cases, as well as BRAF. And they all those drugs have FDA-approved medications that can be used to effectively help treat those patients. Additionally, immunotherapy, which has become very important in the overall field of oncology, has also made its way into thyroid cancer as an effective treatment option. So all these things put together demonstrate how the field is rapidly moving forward, and keeping up on a knowledge base can, one, be challenging, leading to some of the reasons why people might not follow guidelines, but also demonstrating the importance to make sure that patients are getting the most appropriate care.
Thank you. What strategies have you employed in your country or region to adapt recommendations according to local context and limitations? Are there any approaches that have worked particularly well?
I think in academic centers, it usually works pretty well because you have people who are more focused in certain specialties like thyroid cancer versus, you know, being forced to treat a wide variety of cancers. I think some things that we've learned that works well is, I think using commercial testing can be beneficial. I mean, the downsides of commercial testing that there's theoretically can be more expensive than doing in-house, and it requires, you know, working with a commercial company to get them tissue and et cetera. But I think the benefits are being is that commercial testing, instead of doing small sample PCRs, they can do kind of a broad next generation sequence or NGS testing to get us all the information to most effectively treat the patient. And I think as a whole, instead of doing individual PCR tests each gene, this can kind of save on tissue because you do more tests with smaller tissue, as well as these companies keep up with the latest testing that needs to be done, which can be harder for a smaller scale genomic platform. Additionally, I think a multidisciplinary clinic is of crucial importance. So you have all the specialties coming together to kind of impart their knowledge for thyroid cancer and what they think is best and the newest developments in the field, so everyone can learn from each other to choose the best course of action for the patient. As well as, I think, CME, continuing medical education can be an important step for people treating thyroid cancer in order to keep up with the latest data and the latest guidelines.
Thank you, Dr. Stewart. So which stakeholders need to be included in consultations when localizing clinical practice recommendations?
So when I think of the people that need to be involved in taking care of a patient with thyroid cancer, you know, the adage of, you know, it takes a village comes to mind. And I think there's many people who are very important in providing input to making sure the patient gets the right kind of care, both medically and supportively. So, of course, you know, medical oncology, which is what I am, plays a role, as well as surgeons, as radiation oncologists. Endocrinologists are very important for thyroid cancer and making sure the levels are correct and in terms of TSH, thyroid function, which can be critically important to a patient's symptoms. Nuclear medicine is involved, as they are often the ones, it depends on institution, but who kind of handle the radioactive iodine, which plays a role in some patients' treatment. Pathologists are of crucial importance in helping, you know, histology and doing everything that pathology does when they look at it under a microscope. On top of that, pharmacists making sure that everything is administered correctly, and speech and swallow for patients is important, given the location of people treating thyroid cancers, dietitians, and social workers. Of course, there's probably many others that I'm not thinking of at the moment, but that I think is a good group that needs to be involved in a patient's care in multidisciplinary clinic, making sure that patients have the best care possible.
So, considering precision medicine, how do you and your clinical colleagues keep up with novel developments and or approvals, and what authority determines the subsequent recommendations for your local practice?
So, in keeping up with the kind of most up-to-date information, I think there are several ways to do it. I think a big one is, you know, meetings. You know, ASCO for medical oncology is one of the bigger meetings. There's plenty others. There's, you know, surgical specialty meetings, you know, thyroid society meetings, et cetera. Trying to, you know, it's almost, you can't go to every meeting. It's almost impossible, but every meeting has highlights and various best ofs afterwards that can help people stay up to date. NCCN guidelines also provide a good kind of broad overview of recommendations for the workup and treatment and staging of patients with thyroid cancer. Interestingly, I think social media has actually grown and playing more and more of a larger role in updating people treating thyroid cancer on latest updates. You know, people, usually often experts in the field, will see a paper or something presented at a meeting and, you know, provide some of the context for that. And then that, you know, allows for further exploration by the doctor if they see that, you know, whether it's Twitter or any of the other social media accounts. Obviously, it's not necessarily feasible to search every journal every day, but online journals, you know, play a role. If there's a specifically big paper that's been published, UpToDate and, you know, online resources like UpToDate and DynaMed, for instance, provide a good updated source of information. In terms of what institutional bodies generally allow, you know, help us institute guidelines and such, you know, it's, you know, obviously the big one, at least in the US, is things like the FDA. It's very, you know, we typically don't give drugs unless they're FDA approved or part of a clinical trial. And, you know, then there's within the institution, you know, there's generally pharmacy approving committees to get something on formulary. And of course, insurance plays a role in making sure that insurance covers the drugs, some of which are quite expensive, so that patients can have access to it.
And finally, in resource-limited clinical settings, how might clinicians overcome barriers to the implementation of precision medicine approaches?
You know, this is a constant problem, not just in thyroid cancer, but across disease states. You know, some various things that could be tried if something is needed. For instance, I've had some success where patients either are underinsured or don't have insurance, and a certain targeted therapy, for instance, is appropriate for a patient. Sometimes you can work with the companies as they can have patient assistance programs, which can help get the access to the drugs for the patients, as well as certain, you know, every state or community sometimes have these assistance programs as well, which can be looked into. Sometimes collaborating with a nearby larger center, large volume center, sometimes has access to resources for patients that may not have, you know, maybe underinsured, that can help get access to the drugs. And along those lines, sometimes there's clinical trials which are available at these larger centers, which can be considered, and you know, generally the investigator agents are paid for by the study. And those are some options. You know, genomic testing again is now kind of approved for insurance, so it's less of a struggle to get that testing done. But in a resource limit setting, it has to be careful. I mean, you consider, if it's just a limited, very limited genomic panel and you can't get a more widespread next generation sequence testing, so you can do kind of spot testing of certain genes to see if they'd be appropriate for therapy, you know, with a PCR, which may be more affordable in that setting. So those are some different, you know, it's an ongoing issue, but those are some potential strategies to help get patients get access to the care they need.
Thank you, Dr. Stewart. This brings us to the end of the episode. Thank you also to our listeners for joining us for this informative discussion. If you haven't done so already, please subscribe to the podcast on your favorite app and recommend us to your colleagues. To collect your CME credits, visit oncology.knowledgeintopractice.com. Here, you can also find other episodes in the podcast series, as well as further free educational resources in oncology. You can find a link to this website in the episode notes, along with all the references discussed today. We look forward to welcoming you again next time.